Has the UN Disability Committee been advocating for COVID response planning and COVID recovery to include the disability sector?
Yes, we definitely have. I mean, the inclusion of people with disability in policy and policy discourse is central to the CRPD. That's the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And so the COVID epidemic, pandemic, is just another aspect of that process. And so we see it as essential that people with disability are involved in that planning and inform the responses that governments take. And also that it happens as well with any recovery processes, that the planning for us to come out of the pandemic is inclusive of people with disability.
And has this happened?
It's very difficult to say how well it's happening because the whole world's in such a state of influx and countries are at different stages, and some countries are facing second waves, some countries are still in the, haven't reached their first peak yet. Given the information that we're receiving about what's happening, it tends to suggest that it's not happening across the board. It might be happening in some very isolated cases, but it's not happening on a large scale and at a high level scale.
And as an international lawyer and co-chairperson of the UN committee, do you consider this a significant human rights issue?
It's an incredibly important human rights issue. What we've seen with the pandemic is that people with disability, especially those with existing health conditions, at heightened risk to COVID-19. And so they are featuring very strongly within the death toll. So not to include them is to leave people out of the loop in terms of critical information that could save their lives.
Well, you really can't get any more serious than that, can you?
No. Well, people need to be informed in terms of, you know, how to recognise the symptoms, what to do to avoid, you know, contracting the disease, what to do to be able to manage their day-to-day life in a safe way for both themselves and the rest of the community. But it's also important that they have access to critical equipment that allows them to be able to manage, to act responsibly for their own health, but also for the rest of the community's health.
But if you're in that situation, wouldn't there be an element of fear knowing that you needed that help in a circumstance like that, not just here in Australia, but globally?
Well, I was in that situation.
What do you mean?
That was my own personal experience in late February through most of March. People with disability weren't included in the first plan, health response plan, that was rolled out on the 16th of February. There was panic buying on hand sanitizer, price gouging. The prices went up quite significantly. And people with disability, lots of people with disability, require personal support people to come into their homes each day and support them to very basic daily living tasks, such as getting in and out of bed and showering and grooming and dressing and eating. They are quite fundamental daily tasks. And in order to break transmission potential, masks and hand sanitizers are critical. And so we couldn't access them. We didn't know how we were going to access them. And we couldn't get any information. There was no dedicated, targeted disability specific information to let disability support workers or people with disability know how they could access personal protective equipment. And so it was a situation where you couldn't feel as if you were in control. You couldn't feel as if you were doing anything to manage your risk. And so it just felt that outside the doors of my house, there was this disease that was going to come and get us. I mean, I know that sounds irrational, but without any information or any way to try and manage the situation, levels of anxiety did increase for people.
And that brings me on to my next question of there must be considerable mental health issues also for people with disabilities brought on by the situation?
Ah, look, incredibly so. I mean, I'm generally not a person that worries very much. I'm a fairly relaxed person, and I found it stressful not being able to feel as if I was able to manage and control the situation.
So what about people in different settings?
Well, people living in congregate care, say group homes or psychiatric facilities, who don't normally have a lot of control over their daily lives, were finding increased restrictions on their freedoms. So we have reports of people being locked in their rooms in group homes for long periods of time.
What do you mean by
some
long?
Up to 23 hours a day.
But isn't that against a law or human rights laws at least?
Well, it's definitely against human rights principles. There have been situations of abandonment. There is the famous case of the young boy, the 17-year-old teenager in whose primary supporter was his father. His father was diagnosed with COVID. His father was forcibly taken away to quarantine. The young man with cerebral palsy was left without anyone to support him, and he died.
Is this something that is commonplace?
Well, we haven't had a lot of situations like this. I mean, there have been several reports of abandonment. I'm sure when I have more contact with my colleagues overseas, we will hear of more situations of abandonment. We will hear more stories and of incidents of increased restrictive practices, people being medicated to try and restrict movement within group homes and facilities, people being mechanically restrained by having their wheelchairs disengaged so they won't mix with other residents or go outside. So, yeah, it's unprecedented, but unfortunately some of these situations we have seen even without COVID in congregate care. And on top of all that, stories started to swirl about the various triage processes various governments were putting into place. And then triage of critical care, so who they would actually provide critical health care, like ICU and ventilator care to.
People with disabilities were losing out in terms of in the queue?
People with disability were being identified as being those that weren't going to receive care. In some cases, it was arbitrarily based on certain diagnoses. In some cases, it was more broadly just disability or pre-existing health conditions. There was documentation that was available from listed very specific groups of people with disability that wouldn't be receiving critical care. Now, these were all draft versions, but they were still, some of them were official positions.
So as the co-chair and as a disability advocate, is this something that the member states have to look at individually in their national approaches, and also something that the committee is going to have to look at?
Well, we'll be examining. We've been including in our communications with states, those states that have put their reports in, and we're working on this year about their COVID responses, and we'll be gathering those responses and engaging with states to try and get a sense of how various states have approached their COVID response and how they intend to approach their COVID recovery. But this is just symptomatic of the broader inequality and discrimination that people with disability experience and have experienced for a long time.
So your call to action would be?
People with disability aren't inherently vulnerable. It's the inequality and the discrimination that they experience in their day-to-day lives that creates that vulnerability. If you want to build an equitable, resilient, sustainable community, we're not all safe. Nobody is safe.